We know this story well. The Israelites, leaving captivity, have come to the edge of the sea, but Pharaoh, struggling with his decision to let them leave, pursues them. And so, now trapped between an army on one side and the waters on the other, the Hebrews' nerve broke. Why would you take us out of Egypt to die in the wilderness? Sure, it was awful the lives we lived, but at least we were alive. Moses calms the people. He steps out into the water, and using his staff, the water parts and the people pass through. It's not long before Pharaoh's army gives chase, but as Moses and the Israelites step to the other shore, their liberation is finalized as the water comes crashing down, destroying the Egyptian army. We know this story well, but there's a problem here. The problem is that the text is a complete mashup of different images, recounting seemingly different events which have all been thrown together, and we remember it this way in our cultural memory. Generally, when we see this in the Bible, and it happens a fair bit, we accept there's the widely accepted idea that a later editor came and combined different versions of a story to give us the text that we have now. So some ways you can see this in the current text. Pharaoh, regretting that he let the Israelites go, he decides to follow them with his army. This is in verse 7. Well, it's only after Pharaoh decides to follow them with his army that God hardens Pharaoh's heart and he decides to go follow them with his army. So this happens a few times in the text. We get some redundancies, the story told and retold again. We're also familiar with that image of Moses stepping out with his staff in the water and the water dividing. There's actually two different ways that the water is described as moving in this passage. One is the standard staff and water splitting, and the other is a wind coming up and just pushing it back further and away from the people so that the whole land became dry. So there's numerous inconsistencies throughout this passage. But all of the different strings of this story, they share one common theological statement. All of them declare firmly that God is in control, that God takes an active role in the liberation of the people of Israel. But I've got to tell you, I really struggle with this. The God described here is an active agent in our world, a God able to intervene, to make changes, to push and pull on creation from outside. This is one of the most difficult pieces of Christian faith for me. Not that I disagree with it, not all the time. Certainly there are times in my life where I firmly hold on to that belief and that faith and that trust that God is an active participant in the world, pushing and pulling on creation. That there is such thing as divine intervention. But I don't hold on to that all the time with tremendous ease. Is God active in our world? Does God intervene in the affairs of creation? For the better part of a year, I've been listening to a podcast series by Mike Duncan called Revolutions. Has anyone listened to Mike Duncan podcasts? You're always my podcast guy, Tim. So he'll take a specific revolution, such as the French Revolution or the Haitian Revolution, and over the course of a season, just run through what happened from start to finish. He looks at events, he looks at influences, and he looks at characters. And two characters have really jumped out at me. The first was George Washington, and the second was Simon Bolivar. known as the Liberator in the Spanish-American Wars of Independence. They share a lot in common, these two men. Both were born in the Americas. Both of these men were aristocrats. Washington, born into a family of wealthy plantation owners, and Bolivar, into a family made wealthy from copper mines. Both of them led armies in wars of independence, and both of them were incredibly, incredibly lucky. Throughout his Revolutions podcast and his earlier History of Rome podcast, Duncan likes to point out that one thing great leaders in history seem to have is a tremendous amount of luck. That seems to be the piece that unites all of them together, is a tremendous amount of luck. Whether we're talking about Julius Caesar or Napoleon Bonaparte, at least once in their careers, if not numerous times, luck just seems to go their way. And this certainly holds true for Washington and Bolivar, who, from what I can tell, were both actually terrible generals. Washington was known as a master of the strategic retreat. All his successes were strategic retreats. But his strength was his ability to hold his army together despite all these losses. And Bolivar, he had his successes, sure, but he had more than his fair share of failures. Bolivar was exiled 4 times before finally succeeding in his goal of liberating Venezuela. Well, Gran Colombia, as it was called then, in a much larger area than Venezuela. Each time he'd try to drum up support and end up losing and getting kicked out of the country. So he'd go to other people and try and drum up support, and he'd come back and have a bit of success and then be sent off again because he'd lose. And then he'd drum up some more support and come back. I mean, he was persistent and stubborn. But boy, was he ever lucky. As I listened to their stories, it seemed almost as though a force beyond each of these men, a will beyond their own, was interceding to make everything work out just right for them in the simplest of ways. And it would be easy to say that their successes, their lives were foreordained, but there's a problem. Because for every Washington and Bolivar, there are countless other leaders whose names never hit the history books because luck or the weather or whatever worked against them. And similarly, as in our story today, for every group of oppressed people that narrowly escape capture or death, there's a Wounded Knee massacre or some other horrible and tragic event we don't even hear about. I was cautious about raising this subject because I don't have a definitive answer. As I said earlier, sometimes I believe it. Sometimes I believe God intervenes and moves the world in a direction. But even though in my heart I long for this, I hope for this, I look at the world and I wait, crying out for God to do something. Other times I carry tremendous doubt. I wish I could get up here and say with full and absolute trust, don't sweat it. God will fix it all. God will reach out a divine hand and sort out what needs to be sorted, putting everything into its proper place, whatever that means. Proper place usually is defined by the person saying proper place. But that's just not the way God works. Certainly not all the time, anyways. Maybe one day. Jesus himself says, it rains on the just and the unjust alike. There's no divine umbrella God brings down to shelter the people. But here's where I find hope. Moses goes to the water. He reaches out with his arms. He stretches out his staff, and the water parts. And a path is offered. The Israelites are invited to walk through it. It seems that the earliest authors and editors found God's power in the destruction of Pharaoh's army. That's what's emphasized in the text. But for me, the power is in the opening of a path. God doesn't pluck the people of Israel up and move them to the other side of the sea. God opens a path and invites them to walk it. The power of God, God's intervention in the world, the way we encounter the divine presence, is in the paths that God opens up and invites us to walk down. Does God intervene in other ways? I'm in a more optimistic phase of my life, so I believe yes, but other times, I don't know. I hope so. But I do believe that God has created ways for us to go through this world and continues to create ways for us to go through this world. As we move through the fall and our exploration of our identity, we can see who we are through the earliest expressions of Christianity. The earliest Christians were called people of the way. Our origins are in a willingness to walk the path of Jesus of Nazareth, who we see is the embodiment of the path that God opens up for us. In many ways, part of our identity as Christians goes beyond that to say, God doesn't just open a path for us, but rather, God is the path that is opened for us. Does God intervene in the world? Absolutely. God is constantly opening paths for us to walk down. Now, maybe not especially appealing paths. Maybe not even survivable paths. But paths are always being opened for us to walk down. Here is a path. Here is a path. Here is a path. And each time, it is sacred and it is holy. And when we fail to walk down the path, a new one is open next to us the next instant. This is the meaning of grace, that no matter where we wander, the path is always there, following us. Wherever we go, paths are always available to us as individuals, as nations, as a whole creation. In every moment of our lives, God intervenes, saying, "Here is a path for you to walk down." In every moment of our lives, God is parting the sea and saying, don't be afraid. Go forward. Here is the way that makes this moment, this day, this place, this creation sacred. And sometimes we'll follow that path, and sometimes we don't. But even when we don't, that path is opened up to us again. And it moves us to a new place and leads us to the promised land. Thanks be to God. Amen.